Flames fans, another episode of Flames Unfiltered, hosted by myself, Brad Brood, and Kyle Lewis. And Kyle, this is a Flames team that I cannot believe this is true, that is not eliminated from the playoffs yet, officially.
Yeah, that'll come any day now, but it is kind of strange, right?
It may especially be today.
We considered them eliminated a long time ago, so just waiting for the official word.
It's just funny, though, that like they're not eliminated. You know, it's hard to believe at this time with the struggles that this team has went through this year.
Yeah, then gutting their roster, the trade deadline, as they should have, but it's just like for some of the teams that are eliminated, I would have thought Calgary would have been ahead of them, but or behind them, as it were, but here we are.
It's been a pretty good hockey team, though, of late.
Surprisingly so. With much to people's chagrin, which we talked about in our last episode, just about how it's hurts the lottery chances a bit, but I mean, at the same time, it is nice to see certain guys performing maybe as we hope they would, and maybe some being pleasant surprises as well.
Yeah, you know, like since we last talked, Vegas ended up beating the Flames 6-3, and it was not a 6-3 game, a very, very close game for the most part, and a bunch of empty netters at the end, and then Calgary beating Anaheim Saturday night 5-3 in a fairly, I don't know.
A breakaway extravaganza.
Yeah, a real sloppy, just a weird hockey game. A weird, weird hockey game.
Yeah, very strange. Cool to see Ryan Strome get his 500th point, though, against his old team. That was neat.
It is. He's been a pleasant surprise for this team this year, and I like what he does out there. He's gets the job done.
Yeah, and Ole Bobby Orr Matta continues to rack up the points.
I feel like that's a lot more short-lived than long-lived, but also another pleasant surprise is everybody that this team has seemed to acquire gets on a hot streak, and thus this team is kind of on a hot streak. Say the Vegas game. I do have a quick question before we move on from that game. Did you stay up? Were you up for the ice debacle in the end of the second period?
Yeah, that's as far as I made it. What was it, a 41 minute delay or something?
Yeah, something like that. Quite interesting. I've seen it. I mean, I've seen it on a junior hockey level probably more frequently than I want to admit. But at an NHL level, that was quite a long delay. And the fact that they were actually talking about not finishing the game and figuring out it was very interesting.
It was a strange one for sure. It was funny to see the players all huddled around talking together too and trying to help, and it's just very, very odd. Very odd.
This week, that arena, who I believe to this point has been flawless with problems and anything like that, hosts the NCAA Final Four, and that will feature lots of North Dakota prospects on the North Dakota team. So it'll be fun to watch them take on Wisconsin in the late afternoon on Thursday, and then in the nightcap, Michigan takes on, why am I drawing a blank, who Michigan plays? Denver.
There it is.
Another NCAA.
I wasn't able to bail you out there.
No, I didn't expect you to. I'm assuming that will be on TSN in Canada. I would assume that would be on TSN.
On ESPN 8, the Ocho, perhaps? Oh. Remember that line? Dodgeball? Greg. Yeah, I suspect that it will be as well. And actually, Friday, Moncton plays game one of round two against whoever their opponent's going to be. They've been off since last Wednesday. Like, it's been a long, long break. So
those playoffs get drug out. Just, I mean, the amount of travel and stuff, especially out in the WHL, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild out here, too. Just, I mean, because you have to travel into rural parts of Quebec so often, right? That's where the majority of the league resides. So, but yeah, we're balls deep into, the NCAA. Well, so a lot of seasons have concluded, right? Playoffs and junior hockey, tournaments, and obviously the playoff race in the NHL is quite interesting of late, particularly in the East.
It has been. Let's just switch right to that now, and then we'll get to some Flame stuff. But yeah, I mean, you look out east, and as we sit currently, as we record on a Monday evening, prior to puck drop of any games so far on a Monday, I believe, Ottawa holds the last spot at 90 points, but on their tails, the Islanders 89, Detroit 88, Columbus 88, and Washington 87.
That's wild. What a log jam, eh? Who would have thought? Like, you know what? There's so much parity, and we talk about it all the time, but that is a wild, like, wild field of teams all fighting for real RG spots.
It's crazy. And then you get, you know, just to add to that, you know, you have Ottawa at 90, but you have Philadelphia, you know, hanging on for dear life at 90 also, and a team that's been up and down and in and out of the playoffs too. And man, that is a lot of teams vying for, I mean, it's basically seven teams vying for two spots.
Yeah, and one of those teams, and we need to talk about this just because it's very interesting because it hasn't happened quite like this in quite some time, is the firing of Patrick Waugh and the hiring of Peter DeBoer on Long Island. Were you surprised by that?
Very. Four games to go. I thought about it hard. I don't remember that ever happening with that few games to go before the playoffs.
Yeah, well, when the Devils fired Robbie Fatorik and hired Leah Robinson and won the Cup in 2000, it was really late in the season, but it certainly wasn't this late.
You ever wonder, okay, I get the timing. I know they're off till Thursday, so they have, you know, some time to
get systems in place.
But still, you're not going to get to practice. I mean, you practice only with that system and stuff. But I mean, that's going to be an interesting to see if that works. I also wonder, Patrick Waugh's coaching history is marred with weird firings, and I don't know. Is this it for Patrick Waugh behind the bench?
That's a really good question. I'm inclined to believe, just because of the story side of it, that he might eventually have a coaching role in Montreal. He still owns the Quebec Remparts. I'm sure that'll keep him busy, but I really don't know. It's hard to say. To be honest with you, I didn't think John Tortorella was going to get the job, and now
I didn't either, and that happened too just recently, where he lands in Vegas, and they get the coaches bump a little bit from that, and this team goes out and impressively beats Edmonton and is on a little bit of a roll. But I didn't see, I shouldn't say that, because the guy has a lot of success. And you know what? I'm going to say something here, and we might be dealing with this in Calgary. I think the meter was like really like swayed to the difficult, hard to play for coaches. Mm-hmm. And then that pendulum has moved so far and too far over to the country club coaches, and they're not having success. I think what's happening in this league now is we're trying to find a stabilization. I believe that for a team to be successful, the coach has to be holding players accountable. And with the younger the kids are nowadays, they're coming into the league. Society is changing. Accountability is not high on the list for a lot of people. And I don't know. I think it's I think there's a fine line in the coaching in the NHL right now to what gets you success.
Well, we saw it with Daryl Sutter, right? I mean, he got the best hockey that anybody ever got out of Johnny Gaudreau, and by all accounts, Johnny loved playing for him, right? It's just as an example, but the coaches like that, as we all know, wear out their welcome rather quickly in most cases. And I'm trying to think of a coach that really rides that line well. That's one thing I found from like watching the Chase. It's like, I do feel, and it's just my opinion, that Huska is way too mild with his room.
Way too mild.
I think he's over communicating a lot. Like, I just, a lot of, and that's just snippets, of course, but there's so much rhetoric and this playing the right way crap that I get so tired of hearing. It's like, there's no substance to that in my mind. Maybe it's just the way I interpret it, but it wears on me for sure.
I think there's got to be a happy medium. And I do believe that owners are going to lean a little bit more hardcore right now, because I think it does pay off. And I'm not saying be an asshole. I'm saying, players, I don't care how good you are or that you're in the NHL, you need to be held accountable, right? I mean, you have to perform.
Well, everybody does. Yeah, but it's still weird to me, though, that a guy is well-respected and well-liked, who's got results as a coach like Bruce Cassidy did, that he got the boot in favor of a guy as notoriously harsh as John Tortorella. I'm still trying to get my head around that. But again, it's the same as the Pete DeBoer thing on the island. It's like two teams that are looking for the coaching bump to get them in the playoffs and maybe even push them through a series, right?
Yeah, and DeBoer gets an extension out of the hopper with it, and I believe it's a two or three year extension on top of that. So that firing caught me totally off guard. I checked my phone to make sure it still wasn't April 1st, because I was shocked with that one.
Yeah, that was a really, really strange one. Also, the simultaneous nature of it, the firing of Waugh announcing the hiring of DeBoer. You don't see that a lot either, right?
On a Sunday morning of Easter.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
It is. But I mean, it points to it's actually, when you think about it, if you're kind of iffy on him anyway, it's not a bad strategy to try and push yourself into the playoffs when you have that big of a logjam of teams, right? Because generally that's what happens, as we all know. Again, like you said, the coaching bump, right?
Man, you guys, it's so hard to make the playoffs in this league. The teams with what we got with the salary cap era is such an amazingly cool thing, where the parity is there is such a logjam amongst talent in this league, and any night anybody can beat anybody, and it's dire for franchises to make these playoffs, and I can't blame owners. I can't blame owners.
No, it's all about, it's like any business, it's all about money. I mean, we were talking today at work about fuel surcharges and the cost for everything rising, and you can't take loss after loss after loss, right? It's so different in pro sports. I mean, if you have an opportunity to get some playoff revenue, you have to take that chance. And I could, it's not inconceivable that the Flames might find themselves in that position in a couple of years. Maybe they're on the cusp of a playoff spot, and coaching change is what makes it happen. I mean, those are the types of buttons that get pushed this time of year. So, speaking about that, the one thing that really surprises and kind of disappoints me, quite honestly, is the play of the Detroit Red Wings of late. They've really fallen apart at the absolute worst time.
Well, they are 4-6-0. The Islanders won better than them, 3-7-0 in the last 10. Those are both collapses. And then when you got teams like Ottawa winning 6 of 10, Philly winning 7 of 10, it switches those standings right. It changes on a nightly basis when you're watching hockey.
Yeah, and I was a little, actually, to that point about Ottawa. First of all, Tim Stutzel might have scored the goal of the year last night. Like, what a burst of speed that was. Holy Lord.
I love watching him play.
Oh, unreal. But you got to believe that Jake Sanderson is not 100%. Like, I think he came back. He clearly came back a little soon. I'm sure Shabbat will do the same thing as soon as he's able to play. But for a team that's that banged up, they lost, former Flame Dennis Gilbert as well, who incidentally is... Gilbert is engaged to a friend of mine's niece, just for a fun little fact. But he had a separated shoulder, I believe it was, so he's out. That team just keeps on trucking along.
Yeah, they're a beat up hockey team, and
all the back end too.
Another team that's trucking along, and I'm shocked that they are, is the Nashville Predators. They've won 7 of 10 also, and I did not see that happening, and I did not have them in the playoffs. It's crazy.
Well, and they have enough veteran players that they could actually make a little bit of noise in the playoffs too. I liken them to Gord Miller's comments, like I think 20 years ago, as I said before, about the Philadelphia Flyers when they just had a god awful year. That was the Predators last year. They couldn't possibly be as bad as they played all year. I didn't see them in a playoff spot, mind you, but the fact that they're far better than they were shouldn't really surprise anyone.
Kind of like the Vancouver Canucks this year, when nobody had them being as miserable of a team as they have been. And on certain outings, like I don't know how they beat Colorado the other night, but certain outings they find their way, and then they will be as bad as you possibly can get for the next 4 or 5. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, and I mentioned that to you before we went on. Just one of the things I want to talk about was the conjecture around the Canucks rebuild versus the Flames and the infighting, like amongst the independent fan bases of each other, than the fighting amongst themselves or with each other. Like it's just, there's a whole thing around that where it's like, they're not really all that comparable, because the Canucks were a lot more competitive a lot more recently, going back to when they lost that series against the Oilers.
Yeah.
But they fell apart so quickly that to suggest that, like, the Flames are probably here in the rebuild and the Canucks are probably here, but the Canucks just got here, right? The Flames are like slowly progressing, but the Canucks just fell apart so, so badly. That locker room is oof.
The day the day Horvat was gone, the destruction started.
Yeah, which makes you wonder how fragile that room was to begin with. And I certainly don't want to speculate, but I mean, the whole Pedersen Miller thing, bringing in a guy like Evander Kane, Thatcher Demko cannot stay healthy seemingly ever. I mean, there's just so many things working against that team. But ultimately, what it comes down to now is they didn't do enough at the trade deadline. Ownership has to fully embrace where they're at, which is exactly what Flames fans were saying before, which clearly, thankfully, ownership has done. But it's a process. It's an arduous one. The Canucks should not have been this bad this fast, but that's the sport sometimes, right?
Well, in their prospect pool, and I mean, it's hard for us to sit and throw stones because, I mean, I don't think our prospect pool's terrible. I don't think our prospect pool's amazing and top-end talent, but I think ours is definitely headed in the right direction. But I look at Vancouver's and
it's not good. Ours is extremely deep. We probably have the best prospect pool in the NHL, I would say, or damn near it. But I do agree there's a little bit of a lack of top-end talent, but the Canucks are 20 spots behind that.
You know, and I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer on our prospect pool, but the fact is we need, I mean, it's great to have a bunch of, I feel like the last few years we've just had a glut of bottom six forwards. And I feel like our prospect pool is full of a glut of bottom six forwards in the NHL.
A lot of them are second line players. Some I suspect are first line.
I'm just talking about our forward prospects. I think our defensive prospects are pretty good. I look at our forwards and I'm like, okay. Now we're waiting to see on a lot of them. So I'm not counting the Cole Reschneys and that, because guys are still time out, right? But this week we recalled Sunev. And I mean, what are we gonna see there? We didn't get to see him. What are we gonna get to see? How long are we gonna get to see?
I mean, Nidar Suniev has been a pretty good year. So, but these recalls are, they don't, people say they're auditions. They don't, when the games don't matter, it's really hard to get a grasp on them in a sense.
And player placement too. Cause like we just sent down Brennan Orthman, and I didn't mind his play, but for a first round pick, and I know we're just giving him a shot and seeing what happens here. Like, I don't see him as a top six forward, but who am I to judge when we only got to see him for a couple games, right?
Well, that's what I mean, this carousel of guys up and guys down. It's not, to me, it's not really conducive to any, like if a guy had a 20-game run, that's different. That's a pretty good sample size to work with, but nobody's getting that, right?
And he nothing to knock his stint up here. He had 2 points in 2 games. So like that's just kind of like when Rory Cairns was here last year. But I'll still go to my grave saying Rory Cairns isn't a top six forward in the National Hockey League unless your team's not good.
I don't know. Another guy that never got much of a look. And, of course, he was the AHL Player of the Week last week, right? So,
exactly. Now's the time to give him a look, but we don't do it. That's the thing.
Well, and again, they go up and down and up and down. It gets a little frustrating. I mean, there's certain guys that, depending on their age, you know, you can kind of make peace with that, but some of them, it's just like you need a sustained run to really get a sense of where they're at. So as far as Suniev goes, I mean, I don't think the ceiling's that high. I do think we do have quite a few potential top six forwards. I don't think we have much for franchise forwards, if anything. The only one right now that I think could be is Matvei Gridin, because he's been unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I couldn't be more thrilled in what we've seen with him. I couldn't be more thrilled.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. Like his shot is absolutely lethal, and his puck retrieval has been good. The pass he made to Fairbairn for that breakaway goal the other night was unreal. Like he does it all. And for a guy that, like I said, just first year pro, it's what a treat to watch. We never get surprises like this.
He just like controls play, and I'm sitting there going, "This guy's just turned 20. Like this is exciting."
Yeah, it's extremely exciting for a guy that I won't say came out of the blue because he was still a highly touted prospect, but I mean, has really established himself quickly as an elite prospect. So, and it kind of makes you wonder, and I guess that's a good segue, like how much of his success has played a role in the, I don't even want to call it a resurgence because it's the best hockey he's ever played, but Morgan Frost, like.
I definitely wanted to talk about that. Morgan Frost has been really, really good. And there was lots of statistics flying out this week when he kept putting up points and putting up points. And I believe since the trade deadline, he's got 12 points in 15 games and
8 goals in that in 15 games.
And don't look now, he's the Flames' leading scorer with 21 goals and 41 points.
Yeah, it's pretty, they're hardly gaudy numbers. I mean, nothing to get excited about, but on a team this anemic and based on those recent stats, And not just the stats, but I mean the types of points he put up, like a lot of primary points, obviously 8 goals. But yeah, he's been really, really dynamic and actually burying his chances. So, but again, it's like that coaching bump. It's the late season bump. Kadri's gone. It's his role now or for now. He's got the ball. The games don't matter whatsoever, and he's running with it. So is this a preview of a 60-point center next year, or is it a outlier for a 35 to 40-point center? That's half rhetorical, and I'm half asking because I really don't know.
Oh, and that's what I wanted to talk about on this, because I think we brought it up numerous times this season on the show that, like, when do we feel comfortable and feel confident that the consistency – has been good enough for Frost where he's part of the future of this team. To put it in perspective, before the trade, he had 61 games. The team was 13, 16, and 29. He was averaging a 0.48 points per game. He was minus 16. Since the trade.
What was that first stat again? What was the team's record?
13, 16, and no, what the heck? Oh, no. What am I saying? Jeez. What am I talking about? I got my notes all jacked up. His points were 13 goals, 16 assists, 29 points.
Okay. Gotcha.
0.48 points per game.
Yeah.
Since the Kadri trade, which has been 14 games, he's got 6 goals, 4 assists, 10 points. That's 0.71 points per game, and he's an even. And
then that projects to like a 55, 60-ish point player.
Which would be above the projections that I would be happy with for him.
Yeah, and the even stat is good on a very poor hockey club, and his face-off numbers have been really good of late, too.
63.8 since trade deadline is his face-off.
63, but that's Yannick Perreault-like. Well, not quite that high, but it's really high.
Thanks to Haynes for these stats here that I'm reading off.
Yeah, that's really impressive. Until I see the first 20 games the next season, I don't know, but... This is a guy that we were all saying, you know, trade him for a second rounder or whatever you can get to hang on. Maybe we should keep this guy, right? And Farabee, too. Farabee's been really, really good as well.
Oh, I've already made my decision on Farabee.
You want to keep him?
I do, because I don't even look at him for, like, his points currently right now are 18 goals, 18 assists, 36 points. But what I like about Farabee is, like, he gets a job done in a lot of different situations, too.
He's very Blake Coleman-esque, actually.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, extremely useful, like very sneaky good offensively.
You know who I'm having my biggest – I'm having two guys that I'm having my biggest doubts. And I'm not counting Sharon Govich because I think I've already written him off, okay?
Okay,
go ahead. Oh, but my two forwards that I'm worried about the most for the future are Connor Zary and Matthew Coronado. I'm worried about Coronado.
Coronado's been quite a lot better lately of late, though.
It's minus 27.
Man, somebody's got to suck on this team, right? Like somebody always like Anderson last year.
It shouldn't be him.
No, but he had a terrible couple of months in the new year, especially like January, February were not kind to him.
I agree, but how? I agree, and
I'm not giving up on him yet. He's been seen his shot return of late,
and I'm not giving up on him yet either. I'm way more apt to pull the plug on Zary than I am Coronado.
Yeah,
I don't know. I feel like there's something more that we can get from Coronado.
I think he's getting more confident shooting the puck again and finding those open spaces like he did in, you know, last year. But, and I think that he will. You know, I kind of likened it to a sophomore slump in his case. It's still a decent contract because there's still the potential for him to be a 30 plus goal scorer, but he's gonna turn it around. And I think that he will, but.
Yeah,
at a really rough stretch. But yeah, Zary is that's a with the injuries and the lack of effectiveness. And he's been really kind of treated poorly at times. I feel like he's buried in the fourth line countless times. It's like that was never a place for him. You know, that still kind of pisses me off when I think about it.
But you know, the thing is, like, I was very disappointed with him for the vast majority of this season. And then right prior to his injury, the 10 games prior, I really liked his play, and I felt like we were just starting to get momentum, right?
Yeah.
And then he takes that crazy, horrible, vicious hit, and then he's out for, what was it, six games, I believe, 5 games?
Yeah, something like that.
And now he's back in the lineup, and I think it was his first game back. He's on the fourth line again, and he's a ghost. And it's like, what just happened? The poor guy got hurt, and now we're going to bring him on the fourth line in his first game back. I don't get stuff like that.
He looks right now like the guy is going to get squeezed out in favor of guys like Morgan Frost. And that's a tough pill to swallow for a player that I was always very high on, but it's okay
to cut bait. I think it's okay, even though he's a first rounder. Like I don't care what draft pick he was at this point. I think we need to throw that aside and look at him as a player for the future. Is he or isn't he? I think more people would vote no
at this point, but again, he's likely to become somebody else's reclamation project. You know, maybe a Bizarre for Shane Wright type trade. You know, comes.
Oh, I don't think Seattle would do that.
No, I'm not saying one for one. I was saying Calgary to throw in a second or something to sweeten the deal to make it worth their while. But eventually teams give up and move on, and sometimes that's exactly what the player needs. So the trick for us is that if Zari does get moved, is to not get too upset when he goes on to be a 50-point player somewhere else, which is entirely possible because he has all the ability in the world to do it.
He looks slow, though. Hey, I heard a stat this week. I should have pulled it up to verify it, but I believe the sources.
All right.
Flames are the slowest team for speed bursts in the National Hockey League.
I feel like Robert Munich shared that, but I definitely did see that.
I believe that's who, I'm pretty sure now that you say that, that's who it was.
And it's very obvious when you watch them play.
Slowest team. But holy cow, this is talk we had years ago. And it's like, oh, we're going to solve this solution. And now I feel like we've regressed back to this. This is stuff we used to complain about when Sutter was coach.
But. Well, that team moved the puck quick, though. So speed was less of a factor because the puck was typically going the right. That's why they had such high shot volume. The puck was going in the right direction. They move it fast. But you got to believe with the players in this team, Coronado, for example, is not a great skater. Gridden's a very good skater. I agree with Zari. Frost is a great skater. Farabee is a great skater. All what I'm trying to get at, I guess, is that I think that the lack of speed is not the roster. It's the coaching style. Like, they just don't attack. And not that they have the weapons to attack, you know, full bore like some teams have the luxury of doing, like a Colorado. But, man, they look slow because they play slow, not because they're actually a slow team, per se.
Yeah.
Like, there's no pace to their game, I don't find. Not with the puck. Like, they don't attack with the puck like a quick hockey team does. Like, they're plodding. They're too methodical at times. And that's why they rely so heavily on snipers like Zane Parak and Matthew Gridden to shoot the puck the way they do, because you'll never confuse with the Montreal Canadiens. They're a fast team. They attack the zone. They move the puck across the ice quickly, you know?
So if you had your choice, what you want, a fast team or do you want a slow methodical team?
Oh, always a fast team.
Right. So what are we doing?
I just think it gets to a point where management might have to realize that at some point that a coaching change might be necessary to get this team playing the style of game that's going to be suited to their skill set and their attributes, which is they are fast, skilled players that are going to be part of this team going forward.
If you look at Coleman and Backlund as much. I mean, Backlund maybe a little bit more than Coleman as far as the future goes. I'm not going to consider them in there, but Coronado is not a fast player. Gridden is. Frost is not terrible, I don't think. Farabee's fine in my mind. Pospisil's a speedy player.
He looks slower though too this year, and I'm sure the injury didn't help, but he looks like a step or two slower.
You know, Klapka's a speedy player. These are the guys I'm thinking that are. Sharon Govich is part of the future. I wouldn't consider him slow. I wouldn't consider him fast, but I wouldn't consider him slow. I look on the back end. You know, Ball and Whitecloud do their job. I don't care if they're fast. And I wouldn't consider either one of them slow either, but that's not what I'm looking for from them. I got Parekh, who's fast. I got Brustevich, who's fast. Why are our metrics so low in this? And you've nailed it. I think it's the style. I think it's the coaching style. And I don't believe that's healthy for the rebuild.
No, and it's so early on. I don't think it's going to have too much of a negative impact, but I mean, again, with all due respect to Ryan Huska as well, coaches have a shelf life. And unless you're John Cooper, nobody's immune to it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And yeah, I often wonder, because there's a sales agency that I deal with, and they do the same thing. Like, they train their people so well. It doesn't matter who I talk to. They're always great. I wonder what John Cooper does with that dressing room, because I mean, he has a lot of skill to work with, obviously. But That team's always competitive. And it's like, what is it that he's doing that's not falling on deaf ears over time, that's intuitive, that's innovative? Like
the same things that Scotty Bowman did, right? I mean, same thing. Like those guys just would come up.
Well, that's that sweet spot though, right? That we talked about between being way too gentle and way too harsh.
Yeah. I think John Cooper is probably more of a hard ass than he's soft. I'll tell you that. I believe that. I think so too.
But I think again, he's methodical when he's like that, right? He's never gonna yell at you, hoping that you're just gonna, you know, he'll intimidate you to do what he wants.
But don't you think though that like he laid the groundwork early, and once you do that as a manager or a coach or whatever, the respect just comes. And when someone new comes into the dressing room, they feed off the respect from the other players to you.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Yeah, right?
And I think it's contagious. Just like a crappy locker room or a toxic locker room is contagious. Also, you know.
Yep. No, 100%. I don't disagree whatsoever. So, to that end, I mean, who knows where that'll all wind up? But I mean, we've got 1 year left in the saddle room, right? So that's a very important year for player development. You want to have a competitive team that challenges for a playoff spot. And there's no reason the first in that building they can't challenge for a spot. They might fall off with, you know, 60 games in, but they should at least be competitive.
I would agree. I mean, I think that would be the goal, right?
It should be at this point, based on the trajectory, the age of their goaltenders, the development point that Gridden will be at that point, Parekh, even a guy like Reshnier Potter could be on that team as a rookie. Like, it's going to be interesting. This last year in the Dome is going to be really, really telling in terms of where this team is at.
So I have a question for you. So this team trades off Anderson prior to the deadline, trades Weegar a couple days before the deadline, moves Kadri on the deadline. And I feel like I'm forgetting somebody, but I don't think I am. That's a lot of talent out the door.
Yep.
A lot. And it brings me to our X factor. And our X Factor this week comes from a guy that will be guesting on the show next week, Trevor Neufeld. And Trevor says, not sure why I'm the only person saying this, but Flames Reddit sure didn't like it. For what it's worth, pre-Kadri trade, 61 games, goals scored per game, 2.43, 32nd in the league. Post-Kadri trade, 14 games, goals scored per game, 3.0, 18th in the league.
Unbelievable.
Why does
14 spots?
So why does this happen?
This is a tough one to answer.
Thank you, Trevor, and we look forward to having you on the show next week.
That's going to be awesome. Trevor's a great dude. It's hard to answer that without sounding accusatory, perhaps, but I do feel that Kadri, because he was such a highly skilled player, did try to do things on his own a little too often, and that can stymie offense. That's part of my answer.
Do you think it's more than Kadri, though? Because, I mean,
we can't. 100%.
You know.
No, I'm not blaming Kadri, but I think cast as the de facto number one center, there was a little bit of that going on. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest difference is that new top line, if you will, of Gridden, Coronado, and Frost. Joel Farabee has been elevated a little bit as well. Like, I think it's just a matter of guys seizing opportunity as much as anything. But that new line is a big, big factor.
I think, you know, and I just, as I spent some time, ripping on Coronado, I think that his game will improve too, when he's put with guys like Frost and especially Gridden, who's elevating situations in the game and creating more scoring opportunities. And
sure. Absolutely.
I mean, I think that's so critical, and it's fun this year. And I think, you know, we'll talk about it as we head into the playoffs, and we talk about, you know, kind of a mental wrap on this season on what things did go the Flames way. And I think one of them is getting to see what we have with, what would you call it, a full youth rebuild line. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that could be conducive, again, to some surprises next year. The Flames next year could be a fairly competitive team. I think the power play is going to be significantly better with Parekh and Brustevich both, and the forwards you just mentioned. But this is like the final part of the transition to a full rebuild was the trade of Anderson, Weegar, and Kadri. Mm-hmm. And these guys are generally, you know, grabbing the opportunities. And hopefully that continues, because again, I can't emphasize enough how much I hate the overemphasizing of players being strong on a non-playoff team at this point in the year, because it literally means nothing. But you have to treat it as an addition and hopefully it carries over, right?
So is there something to be said too, though, just about, like, you know, we always hear, well, they're playing loose. They're playing loose. I mean, is that a factor in this, you think?
To a point.
Don't you think this team was playing loose probably since like November 5th?
Yeah. That's actually really funny, but yeah, pretty well. They would tell you otherwise, but it wasn't a cohesive group as much as they're all buddy-buddy and post a little distraction thing with Anderson as a joke on Instagram, whatever it was. It's like, they're not, I don't care. We talk about this all the time. Like, none of us care how much they love each other. You certainly don't want them to hate each other, but they weren't a good hockey team. They're poorly constructed. They have a total dearth of top-end talent. They had some aging veterans that, while still important pieces, it's not like you were adding, you know, like a Mark Recchi to Sidney Crosby as a kid, right? Like, remember when that, like, that type of move? Like, we're not there yet. I can't wait to be at the point where we add those useful veterans to a really powerful core, but long ways off.
I want this team to love each other, but I'd prefer they just win.
Be nice to do both, but I mean, maybe I'm reaching, right?
I mean, what kind of a franchise would we be where it would be like, Kyle, we didn't make the playoffs and we finished, you know, 30th in the league. But you know what? It was really fun because the guys they looked like they had a really good time together.
I don't even want to answer that. Jeez.
Oh, do you know whose birthday it is today?
Well, it's not yours and it's not mine.
It's Ville Niemanen's 49th birthday.
Oh, I saw that on the Flames alumni page. That's right.
I love that guy. He was such a little.
Well, that's good because everybody else fucking hated him.
I love that guy.
I still remember that back end goal he scored on Curtis Joseph in round 2 of 2004. That was awesome.
So I got a question about. I think it was him, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong a lot lately. Wasn't it him that had his freaking skate off? Getting skate repair work done, and then we scored in like overtime against the Sharks or something in 2004, and he went out on the ice on one skate.
That sounds like him, but I don't remember that.
Is it him or Lombardi? So it was one of the.
Sounds more like a Niemanen thing to do.
I know. I just remember him like scooting out on one skate with a sock, and I'm like, what the heck?
Oh, man.
What do you think of Scott Oak pulling the plug?
You know what? We all knew that was coming, but you like dry a sense of humor and hockey, maybe all sports media, like hilarious guy. He'd been through hell and back. He lost his son Bruce to drug addiction years ago. Scott Oak is everything that a broadcaster should be.
I agree.
Humble, innovative, unique, hilarious.
Kind.
Yeah, very, very kind. Yeah, it's, you know, and I think about, you know, what he's gone through a lot, and I'm really, really happy for him, but as a hockey community, it really sucks to lose a guy like that. It really, really sucks.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, because he's just such a big, integral part of that whole fun of watching Hockey Night in Canada. It'll be different.
We should try and get him on. He'd be a great one to have on the show.
Yeah, he would be fun.
Yeah.
He'd be fun. Lots of good stories.
Yeah, no doubt.
What are the Flames got this week? Tuesday, they're in Dallas. Then they are on to Colorado for Thursday. That sounds like two easy games.
Yeah. And then
Saturday, it's off to Seattle and then home for a back-to-back against Utah on Sunday. Boy, it just gets easy.
Yeah. We'll see what this team's made of. I mean, some of those teams will start resting players, I suspect, in the games ahead. Not sure if they'll do it quite at this point, but... Oh, it's not going to be easy.
Only 6 games to go. Season went fast.
It really did. The whole year went fast. Life is going fast. I feel a bit too deep there. I took that too far, didn't I?
Yeah. Well, next week, Trevor Neufeld, you're going to see him all over Flames Twitter, and you can also catch his articles at Hockey Hot Stove. He's going to join the show, and we are going to kind of reminisce on complete season and kind of where we're going in the future with this and what the offseason looks like and all that good fun stuff.
It's going to be interesting. And like you said, the end is coming quick and we'll be into playoff hockey. So we'll have that to distract us from the disappointing Flames season, but we're properly rebuilding. So it's not that bad. And I can't wait to have Trevor on. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it will be a lot of fun. So enjoy the four games this week, six to go. And Kyle and I and guest Trevor Neufeld will be back next week with another full episode
of Tim Filter. Take care, guys. Have a good week.
Thanks for listening to Flames Unfiltered with Brad Berube and Kyle Lewis, your source for unfiltered Calgary Flames hockey talk. Keep it locked on flamesunfiltered.ca. Subscribe where you get all your podcasts to never miss an episode. Flames Hockey Talk every week, presented by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.